On this episode of Baseball Barbacast, Jake Mintz returns to talk about what hasn't happened yet this offseason. Pete Alonso, Alex Bregman, Anthony Santander, Max Scherzer, Justin Verlander, they're all still looking for teams. We did get some moves over the weekend. Charlie Morton and Hi-Sung Kim, we'll talk about those signings. And then at the end, Jake will run through all the moves he missed and empty his notebook, his thoughts on Corbin Burns, Walker Buehler, Teoscar Hernandez, and more on this episode of Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that knows that Alex Bregman hasn't signed yet because he doesn't want to bother you. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. And it is a pleasure to be back on the microphone. Hello, everybody.
Back on the microphone, still on the other side of the world. It is so good to see you, Jake, as we record this Monday morning Eastern time. I imagine you did not get 6 inches of snow where you are. I hope not. That would probably be ruining your vacation. I woke up to another round of just cold white ice and snow. But I hope that's not the case as your honeymoon continues.
I am on a beach in Thailand, and there is no snow to be seen. I took a couple weeks off to really enjoy my honeymoon, to be off the clock, to relax, to not think about work, and I enjoyed that. However, I was thinking about ball the whole time. It was tickling my brain. As I was trekking through the jungles of northern Thailand, I thought to myself, where will Alex Bregman end up? Who is going to trade for Nolan Arenado? And the guides of our hiking excursion said, what are you talking about, sir?
Well, that is going to be a good structure for this podcast. We are going to begin with what has not happened yet. At the end of the show, our third segment, we're going to let Jake run through the tornado of transactions that have occurred since he last got to speak into the microphone and I was joined by our special guest. And then we do have two other, fairly notable moves. Charlie Morton signing with the Orioles, Hi-Sung Kim to the Dodgers. We'll hit those in the middle chunk. I have not talked about them either. So excited to talk about those. But let's start with what hasn't happened yet, Jake, because it's not really fair to our listeners if we start talking about Corbin Burns, weeks after it happened. So we'll get to that later. Let's talk about what hasn't happened yet, because once the calendar flips to January, it's like, oh, spring training is next month. Oh, these guys need teams. Oh, who's still available? And while I do believe that I talked about this with Ben Nicholson-Smith, I think this has been a great offseason pace-wise. I think we've gotten a really good, there hasn't been too much of a dry spell. Obviously, once you get into January, you kind of have that feeling of what's taking so long. But we're not at what's taking so long point just yet. I would just like to say that. Even though these players, I'm sure, would like to have already been signing for hundreds of million dollars, I feel like we're not at a stage where it's like, oh God, what's going on?
But January is a great time to hit the reset button and take a bird's eye view at what the offseason has been and what it will continue to be. And that is what we'll talk about on this week's opener. So who are the main characters left? Juan Soto, Corbin Burns, off the board. It's Roky Sasaki, whose signing feels relatively imminent within the next couple of weeks. After Thailand, we'll be going to Japan for a few days, and I'm hoping he signs while I'm there. That will be very cool if it happens. Roky is kind of his own thing right now. I actually want to pocket him and save him for later in the week because we haven't actually learned a whole lot more information about his free agency since we last gathered. He's met with some teams. That's great. Just because he hasn't met with a team yet or did meet with a team, I don't think really is notable.
Yeah, the most important thing about Roky is that it is going to happen before January 23rd, right? In a way that we don't know if Pete Alonso is absolutely going to sign in January. We don't know that.
Alex Bregman, however, is the player that is taking up a whole lot of my brain space because there is no obvious fit left. I would say from a roster perspective, Alex Bregman, third baseman, fits very well with the Detroit Tigers. Are the Tigers willing to spend that amount of money on Bregman? That could be a holdup. The most notable thing that's happened with Bregman so far, obviously, is that the Astros have pivoted, signing Christian Walker, trading for Isak Paredes. There's no room for Bregman on the infield anymore. They're not going to bring him back. That's what every indication is. So you can cross the Astros off the list. The Mets and the Red Sox, they're kind of in a similar spot, right? Like, if Bregman signs with the Red Sox, you then need to move Devers to first base, something he has been public about not wanting to do. If the Mets sign him, you're essentially then kicking Mark Fientos, who was exceptional last year, to first base, and you're saying goodbye to Pete Alonso. And so it's hard to envision one of those two things happening. However, it was also difficult to envision Corbin Burns signing with the Diamondbacks, or like Craig Counsell going to be the Cubs manager, or any number of things is difficult to see. But where from I sit right now, there's no obvious landing spot for Alex Bregman.
So I'll give you a little bit of grace because you've been in the jungle in Thailand. But the understanding with Bregman to the Red Sox is that he would be playing second base. That is
really
the way that Alex Cora has talked about it, or that he basically did explicitly talk about it at the winter meetings.
Wow.
And
that's cute.
That is a real thing. And so it seems like Bregman could be a second baseman for the Boston Red Sox. Now, does Alex Bregman want to do that? Now, their early reporting this winter was that he would be willing to. And I mean, again, obviously he came up as a shortstop and played some second earlier in his career. And that is a space that the Red Sox have options on the way in the form of top prospect Christian Campbell, who's played some short, played some second, played some left. Marcelo Meyer, obviously a shortstop prospect through and through. You still have Trevor Story. We've seen him play a good second base. But right now, it is some combination of David Hamilton, of, you know, Rafaela, I guess. So I guess they said he's going to mostly be playing center field. So that's really the Bregman Red Sox conversation.
That's a fascinating thought. It never occurred to me as I was walking in the jungle.
But I will say, which is fair, which is what I will say, though, is that for the Mets, like, I think that would be a very purposeful decision because moving Vientos is something that has already been discussed. You know, like that might happen even if they don't sign Bregman and they don't sign Pete. You know what I mean?
I have no real intel on this. I think that Vientos's defensive ability is a potential holdup in bringing Pete back. Because if you are committing financially to Pete Alonso for 5 or 6 seasons, and that's probably the holdup for 5 or 6 seasons.
Right.
You
if
are
he can
also,
even get it to that point.
Right. You are then also committing to Vientos at third base for that same amount of time. Now, yes, you can move Pete to DH and you could have Vientos play some first. But the understanding then is that you have Vientos, who is not a great defensive third baseman, being your everyday guy. Yes, you can improve. There are ways to get out of that. But I think that that is a dynamic that's involved at some point or in some fashion. Hopping quickly back to Bregman and the Red Sox, I saw a report that Walker Buehler is just publicly campaigning for Bregman to come play for the Red Sox, where Buehler now plays. And it turns out that these guys are like best friends, which is fascinating because they were big rivals in college at Vanderbilt and LSU. Buehler was on the Dodgers and Bregman was on the Astros and they hated each other, you would think, although they were not. Buehler was not there in 2017.
Yeah, because I think Buehler debuted in 18, if I'm correct, but I could check that.
But still.
But that's true. There's some lingering. Buehler has talked about it. And you mentioned the Vanderbilt LSU connection. They played Team USA together.
That makes
sense. So Buehler mentioned that. And yes. Oh, I guess Buehler did debut in 17, but he was not in the 2017 postseason.
And I learned that they own a horse together.
Yes. Yes.
Did you know this?
I did. So I did know that this is definitely for Bregman. There are some rich baseball players. You know, it's like, okay, what do you do with all your money? Right.
Right. Right. Right. Right.
Mike Trout, what is he doing with all his money? He's building a golf course with Tiger Woods, which again, I've talked about this on the show.
So
in
sick.
Millville, right? Like, we don't even care about golf, but that's just like an awesome rich person flex. Like, love that.
Great,
love
please.
That for Mike Trout. I don't know what the status of that golf course is. I hope I you know. Anyway.
He's had a lot of time to spend on it.
True. Now, I think building your own golf course with Tiger Woods probably does require the kind of contract that Bregman has yet to sign. But if you're just regular, you know, baseball player in arbitration, you definitely have horse racing money. You know, if you want to own a horse. And again, this is not an arena I'm particularly familiar with, but my understanding is that he has some familial ties to the industry. And I think that he is, that's how Bregman has gotten involved over the years.
Well, Bueller, I think, is the one with the ties because Bueller is from Lexington, Kentucky, and a family friend of Bob Baffert, who is the only horse-related.
I know there was a Kentucky. Yep.
Person true. I've ever heard of. But I'm now reading from the AP. If you'll let me, this is from a couple weeks ago. All-star baseball players Alex Bregman and Walker Bueller, neither of them all-stars this year, have teamed as owners of a three-year-old colt that won for the first time at Santa Anita on Friday. March of Time, which is the name of the horse, defeated four rivals by 2.25 lengths to win a 6-furlough sprint race worth $60,000 that was designated for horses that have never won.
Oh, I kind of love that. That's great. That's a good kind of specific way to handle that.
I think that usually when player on team is publicly clamoring for another player to join them on the team, it's gobbledygook. But these guys seem like real buddies. This seems like a little bit more than come to Besiktas.
Well, in this case, great reference. In this case, it's also a little bit unique because Bueller's been there for 20 minutes. This isn't like, please come help here. Me win. You know, this isn't like Rafael Devers being like, hey, come on, right. Like let's go do this, or even Trevor Story or whatever. And maybe that's also happening. I don't know. But in this case, this is a little bit different. But Bueller, I mean, Bueller's going to speak his mind. This is not exactly surprising if these guys have a relationship.
And then my other theory with the Bregman thing is that it's taken so long. You know, his dad was recently sworn in as the district attorney for Bernalillo County, New Mexico, which is the county with Albuquerque in it. So yeah. Sam Bregman, congratulations to Sam Bregman, who won his election. He was sworn in a couple weeks ago. He's unbelievable campaign ad that I watch. He's rocking a huge cowboy hat. So
nice.
Yeah, Sam Bregman is out there to stop crime.
I love that. That's now remember. Yeah, and you know where Sam Bregman went to high school, right?
No.
WJ.
Hell yeah.
DC. So there's very fascinating familial lineage for the Bregman family that now finds itself in Albuquerque. Yeah. But no, there's a whole story. Brian McTaggart has a whole story on MLB from 2 years ago about Bregman's family horse racing history.
Oh, the horse racing stuff too. But yeah. If you talk about Sam Bregman in the ad where he's talking about why he should be the defense attorney, he says, I'm trying to make New Mexico safer for me, my family, and your family. I was like, your family is Alex Bregman. And when you go to the website, there's a picture of him with his family. And it's just like all the kids. And like one of them is, hey, Alex Bregman.
It's in this McTaggart story, it says, Sam Bregman, a lawyer and rancher, grew up around the sport because of his father, Stan, who would take him to Pimlico.
So there Hell you yeah.
go. Anyway, but that's okay. Bregman horse racing, Walker Bueller. How did we get there? Right. Red Sox. That's the thing. Like Alex Bregman playing second base. And I mean, sure. Now, is that a long-term plan for him to be playing second base for the next 5-6 years? Is it an on-ramp to Rafael Devers moving to first base in 2 years as opposed to like, Rafi, you're moving tomorrow? That could also make some sense. The point is the Red Sox, who we've, as I talked about with Chris Cassillo, they have yet to actually like spend forward. They have acquired talent. But based on the money they had coming off the books, they haven't actually like invested forward. They haven't really pushed the payroll in a way that we thought they were going to. And this would be an opportunity to do that.
Pete Alonso, what is your panic level? Because the later we get into the market with a 30-year-old right-handed hitting first baseman who has a bad defensive track record, the worry meter for the size of his contract, I think, gets higher and higher. Where are you at on it?
I mean, him, it's even more a matter of tough to find the fit, but the Mets remain the obvious fit, not just
go
because
to the Mets.
He's beloved there, right? But once you get to the point where you start hearing the Angels being floated, that's how you know we're kind of at last call of like, let's figure this out. I wrote about Pete last week, just before New Year's, just kind of talking about how he is objectively one of the greatest home run hitters we've ever seen, like in terms of early in his career. Like that's just a fact. But the first base slugging archetype is just not cool anymore. There aren't that many first base stars in baseball. There aren't, especially that have always been first basemen. And that is Pete through and through. And this position is just not a position not just about how, especially if you're a bad defender, how little defensive value you're providing, let alone base running you're providing. This is not a position where you have a foundational piece as often as it used to be. I had
remember,
a stat in my piece
Joey
about,
Votto.
Yeah.
It was Joey Votto got a big deal there. Miguel Cabrera got a big deal there. Albert Pujols got a big deal there.
But since that, we don't see a lot of big deals for first baseman at all. And honestly, you just look around the game. I mean, think about who is clear like a first base, like Freddie Freeman, right? Freddie Freeman and Pete. But generationally, you mentioned those other guys like Pujols, thing of the past. Miggy, thing of the past. Votto, thing of the past. And we have Matt Olson is one of the guys we've seen. But other than that, like Bryce Harper and Vlad were not first basemen. And then now they are, right? But it's not like they were born and raised first basemen the way that Pete Alonso has been. And so it's just hard to get teams, especially David Stearns, to be like, yes, this is who I'm going to commit these dollars to. But the dynamic is so weird because at some point you have to imagine Steve Cohen, the Mets fan, is going to be like, I would like Pete Alonso to be on my team.
Right. And this will be a fascinating battle here between the head and the heart, between the brain and the soul. Steve Cohen, who bleeds blue and orange and green for money, but mostly blue and orange, obviously wants to have Pete Alonso at the stadium to watch him do Pete Alonso things and to be endearing and corny and hit really big home runs. David Stearns, who was raised in the cauldron of frugality in Milwaukee.
Hey, also a Mets fan. Let's be real.
Raised in a cauldron of frugality, he is clearly, understandably reticent to drop a Brinks truck on a first baseman of that age. And so no matter how this plays out, we learn something about how the Mets operate. With Juan Soto, Steve Cohen could be like, David Stearns, shut up. Okay. Is this smart? No. Are we doing it? Yes. The money's irrelevant. I'm curious to see if that's how things go with Alonso as well.
Yeah. And the last thing I'll say about that is, you know, you mentioned Soto. That's another point I made in what I wrote, is just that unlike with Soto, where multiple teams are desperate to have him, the Mets do not need to bid against themselves here, right? Maybe there are other teams involved. Maybe the Angels are involved for whatever reason. Maybe the Blue Jays are desperate enough to consider Pete and have Pete and Vlad alternating first base and DH for the next however many years. Maybe Oof. One, maybe three. Oof. Hey, they need power more than almost any team. So like Pete Alonso would improve their lineup. That is hard
he
to
does
say.
Do that.
The Giants, I think, would be a good fit there. But that is another situation where they would be essentially punting their draft. They already signed Willy Adames. They'd be punted to Pete Alonso. And that's obviously not a great ballpark fit. I think Pete would hit homers anywhere. Whatever. You're shaking your head. Right. Because again, none of these things make as much sense as just keeping him with the Mets. All of that said, because of the dynamics of there's not other teams bidding Steve Cohen up to $800 million, I think this is going to take some more time. And I think we're going to end up with a shorter term, more creative situation where... Will it benefit Pete Alonso to go back on the market? I don't know. It's just super difficult for me to see him getting 5 years, let alone even four at this point.
I mean, just what do? You give him like 300, you know? You just say, let's do something stupid together.
There's some risk in that too. I don't know. I still feel like
there's
it's going to
no
end
risk
up back
in that.
With the Mets.
There's no risk because the money's not real with them. There's no risk.
Yeah, well, I know, but if,
okay,
it was,
let's
if that
say
was
gets
truly
hurt.
The case...
If he gets hurt,
that
movie
truly
at
the case,
you're good.
Yeah. Well, but this is also part of why I think Pete is underrated, is that he doesn't miss games.
Like, he's so consistent.
Like, it's so automatic. Like, I understand the profile is sketchy, yeah. But to me, it's just like an automatic 65 extra base hits. Like, I don't... That seems like something that a lot of lineups could use, but I know it's not for the price that Boris wants. And this is the biggest Boris potential L remaining on the Scobo left.
I agree. That is circumstantial. And I think I'm writing about Scott right now. And like the Soto W is obviously circumstantial because you have the two of the three highest spending franchises going toe to toe over a generational player. Like you and I could have got that to $700 million. You know, whereas the Alonso thing is difficult for any agent. And so it's a very interesting free agency. So in my mind, Bregman and Alonso are at the top right now. They're kind of in their own group of two. The next duo is one pitcher and one hitter together, Anthony Santander and Jack Flaherty, who both fall in like the 10 to 14 range of free agent rankings. And both guys seem unlikely to return to the team that they finished the year with, Flaherty and the Dodgers and Santander with the Orioles. The Orioles signed Tyler O'Neill already to fill that corner outfield spot. Flaherty, the Dodgers, I know they have 1,000 arms. I know they could use 1,001. A reunion there seems unlikely. Where are you out on these two?
Yeah, Santander is the one. It's also notable because Santander, along with Nick Pivetta, are the other two that have QOs attached. I think the fact that Jack Flaherty, as one of the youngest free agent pitchers available, coming off a successful season. I mean, I know in the playoffs, there were some times where it was like, oh God, there's Jack Flaherty again. What are we getting? You look at the total body of work. It was a really good season for Jack Flaherty, and he's 29 and he doesn't have a QO attached, and we've heard very little. And I don't know if that speaks to questions about his medical. I don't know if that speaks to questions about obviously his performance before this past season, which has fluctuated pretty wildly. But when you think about how active the starting pitching market has been, and this is the other thing I wrote about last week, the fact that he's one of the ones still left standing is both not that surprising, and also if teams are that desperate, you would think someone would have jumped at the possibility to add a very talented 29-year-old by now who doesn't have a QO attached.
Yes and no. However, I think that there is an enormous gap between what Jack Flaherty thinks he is and what teams think Jack Flaherty is. And part of the reason we have that is because we have seen both sides of him be on display very recently. Like, we've seen ass Jack Flaherty, right? He was not great with the Dodgers after the trade during the regular season in stretches. I mean, he wasn't disastrous, but he wasn't.
He was pretty good. But yeah, I mean, obviously what it looked like in the beginning with Detroit, where it was like, he's fixed. Like, this is the best we've seen him since 2019. Right. Like, that he wasn't that good, but I mean, he still had, you know, it was still more than a strikeout per inning and, you know, 3.5 ERA. And he had a couple good postseason starts. So it's, but to your point,
he was sick in the one where he was bad.
Yeah.
He was sick in the one where he was bad. And so I think both of those, like, Flaherty and his reps are obviously going to teams saying, this is what we think Jack Flaherty is. And I just think that's a bigger gap between what they think and what the teams think than for other players. For Santander, I mean, at this point, the Blue Jays just have to jump at this. It'll be a consolation prize for them. What an embarrassing offseason they've had, and it'll be even worse if they don't keep Vlad. This just feels like an obvious fit. And also, he has obliterated the Blue Jays in his career, particularly in that ballpark. And so I think this would be a very fitting home for Santander.
Yeah. Then you only have to deal with Ryan Mountcastle.
And then the next group of players is Scherzer and Verlander. Grandpa and Grandpa. Two future Hall of Famers who were both injured and relatively ineffective last season, who were making gobs of money. Like, outrageous sums. And it's really a question of what do they want, right? Do they want to make as much money as they possibly can this season? Or do they want to be on a contending team? Now, yes, there are some places where you could maybe do both of those things, right? But, like, they'll both get major league deals, right? Like, that to me is a no-brainer. No one's giving, Verlander's not going to get like an invitation to spring training.
No.
But does he have to settle? This is what I'm very interested in. Does Verlander have to settle for a contract with a mediocre team, hoping that he will then get traded at the deadline?
Yeah. I think it's the combination of, right, you look around and you try and find the rotation where it makes sense. Baltimore was one of them, and we're going to talk about Charlie Morton in our next segment. Where are those spots? And then the other question is, you mentioned, okay, sure, maybe they're not like, I need to make as much money as possible when they've already made as much as they have. I mean, but they all, that's just humans, and that's their right. But if you look at the market, you can imagine their representation, whether you're Scott Boras for Max Scherzer or Justin Verlander's agent, who I'm forgetting who that is. You're like, Alex Cobb can get $15 million. You're going to give Max Scherzer more than that. Like, I understand that there are some durability questions for all the pitchers involved, But you have to think that that is like some sort of a baseline, which there are probably teams that are not super excited to give a 40 or 42 year old $15 million for any reason, even if they are, you know, legendary as they are.
Especially because, boy, Verlander looked cooked at the end of last year. Absolutely smoked. Scherzer is a little different, where when he's been available, he's still been relatively effective. And he was hurt in 2024. But if you go back to 23, like, he was still a very good, helpful pitcher in 2023.
Yeah. And I would say so was Verlander. And I was encouraged with how Verlander finished. And I was there at his last start and just the way he talked about it. But yeah, he had a larger sample of bad performance than Scherzer. That is absolutely true. Verlander's represented by ISC. So just wanted to clarify that. But I'm like sneaky more optimistic about Verlander just because I think Scherzer's durability at this point is so like, I mean, he's had every possible injury that is not my elbow needs surgery. And to me, I mean, they both had back and neck and whatever. These guys are 40 years old. Like, I don't know what else to say. Like, they're both going to have risks in this regard. But Scherzer has had too many things where he wakes up and he's like, oh, no, I can't go. And like, that's at this point, that's more of a liability, I think.
It is a liability, but he's been that way for 6 years now. Like, he woke up on the morning of game five of the World Series and was like, I know, it's no bueno today.
I know.
Like, it's not a new thing. So this is a good little wager here. Verlander versus Scherzer. You want to do more innings pitched? You want to do lower ERA? You want to do higher contract value? What do you want
to
do?
I was going to say the two that would be interesting to me would be innings and contract value. I mean, I don't think these guys are getting multi-year deals, right? I mean, there's
no way.
Like, I think maybe you could have if they were healthy, but so, no, I just...
Here's what I would like to say. I would think we should just leave it open-ended.
If you want to take Max and I'll take Verlander, I'll take Scherzer. I'm in. Okay, that's fine.
But let's leave it open-ended. Who has the better 2025 season? We'll decide it. We'll figure it out. Okay. We'll dig into the numbers. Scherzer.
I'll go Verlander. That's fine.
One more group before we take a break. And that's Tanner Scott and Carlos Estevez, who are the two top relievers remaining on the market. I would probably throw Jeff Hoffman into that group, although he's been somewhat marketed as a starter. Kirby Yates in that group as well. The relievers, the top of the reliever market has been pretty frosty, which I'm fascinated by because, I mean, every contender could use all of these guys, right? And so I'm fascinated to see how it kind of unsticks itself from here.
Yeah, and you have to imagine that, you know, Tanner Scott is shooting for Josh Hader light. You know, I mean, he's, I don't think he's getting 595, but I mean, he's been, I mean, he's, it's hard to argue with what Tanner Scott's been the last couple of years. I mean, he's been that good. So yeah, it's hard to, getting 4 years as a reliever is hard. And yeah, this is normally the part of the market that just keeps on moving, that moves early because it's like, we all know we're going to need it. These prices aren't going to get that high. And instead we've seen Trinan, go back to the Dodgers. We saw Aroldis Chapman early in the winter. We saw Jordan Romano to the Phillies. And then other than that, it's been pretty quiet. So you have a lot of these other guys still out there. How many of them are going to be capital C closers? I don't know, right? You also have Kenley Jansen, who's still out there. David Robertson, who had a really good season, even though he's, you know, about to be 40. So there's a lot of other guys. It's not, Kimbrel, right? AJ Minter, who was like awesome and then got hurt and everyone forgot about him. So Seawald is another like closer. Jose Leclerc, remember how important he was in the 2023 postseason? He's not on the Rangers anymore. So there's a lot of recognizable relievers, and it's just, I mean, there's no point in doing team fits in this because there's just a lot of teams need them. And then whether these guys are able to get significant contracts at this point, I don't know. But it'd be interesting if this is like teams being like, hey, relievers, sorry, we're done paying you more than we probably feel comfortable doing. So
trying to find a fit for a reliever is like trying to find a person who needs a nap. Everyone could use one.
We could all use 90 minutes on the couch. I would say that's probably true. That would be good for everybody. But also sometimes not good. This is another reason. Sometimes you're like, oh, I need a nap, and then you wake up feeling way worse.
Oh,
way worse. Do you not agree?
No, that's what happens when you spend too much on a reliever.
I'm just saying, sometimes you're like, I need this. And you're like, oh, no. I did not need this. This was a bad
Rafael
idea.
Montero nap.
This
All
ruined,
right, let's take a quick...
This ruined my day.
Let's take a quick break. And when we get back, we will dig into a couple of the news nuggets that actually happened. Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. One of the biggest questions heading into this offseason was about the Baltimore Orioles and their new ownership group led by Mega Millions winner, that's a joke, David Rubenstein, and his endless supply of cash, his Magna Cartas that he bought for fun, his brand new Presidential Medal of Freedom. Congrats to him and Denzel. Getting nods together. Would he spend money on baseball players? Yeah. Kind of.
Yeah, he's sort of doing that. Yeah.
But he's been doing it in a weird way. And that weirdness continued over the weekend with the Orioles adding Charlie Morton, 41-year-old Charlie Morton, starting pitcher, for a one-year $15 million contract.
There are two conversations to have here. Let's first focus on Baltimore and what this means for them, where this leaves our pitching staff, where it puts your confidence level as a Baltimore on yourself. And then I want to talk about Charlie Morton. So yeah, as it stands, the Orioles offseason is not over. There's other moves that they can still make. However, when you combine this with Sugano, these seem to be their pitching additions. There are still certainly room for a you know, no doubt guy at the top. But when you look at this pitching staff, you look at some of the guys that are coming back in the bullpen, how much better have the Orioles gotten this winter, if at all?
Who cares about better? Who cares about wins? When you go to the payroll number on Roster Resource on Fangraphs.com and you click on the Orioles, and you see $148 million projected 2025 payroll. I mean, that is a mind-boggling sum of money for the Baltimore Orioles, okay? Mm. Especially where they've been out the last few years. It's like they were getting embarrassing.
The last few years. Not historically. I would say we've seen them at that level before. I would also, however, point you to the projection for 2026.
Yeah, what
which I believe is like 40 million.
Yeah, there's a lot of guys coming off the books, including everyone they've paid for this winter. And that's the thing. The Orioles have spent. They gave Tyler O'Neill 3 years, 49.5 million. They gave Charlie Morton 115. They gave Tomoyuki Sugano 113. They gave Gary Sanchez 18.5. They traded for Zach Eflin last year, and he's making $18 million a year. And those are all good signs that this ownership group has an appetite to spend. However, it's hard to get excited about these additions. They are not galvanizing. They are not advertisements. You can't really slap any of these on an email and send it to the fan base next to buy season tickets. And I'm not saying that's how you should run your business necessarily. Wins are the most important thing. And Mike Elias, the Orioles general manager, has been very good at getting this team to win baseball games. He has built something remarkable and deserves a lot of credit for doing so. However, we have yet to see him successfully nail an offseason, which is different than nailing a rebuild or building a farm system or developing talent. We haven't seen him do this with money. And so as underwhelming as the moves are on paper, I'm willing to give Elias the benefit of the doubt for 2025 because maybe he is good at this. But if these go poorly, it's a colossal missed opportunity because every year you have the core of Gunnar Henderson and Adley Rutschman and all these guys that you don't win, that you don't go for it. You're leaving an opportunity on the table. And so it's hard to look at 41-year-old Charlie Morton and 35-year-old Tomoyuki Sugano and think that that's the secret to winning playoff games, right?
Yeah. No, that's exactly it. And I think you kind of talked about it with the Mets, but this is in some ways a more interesting dynamic because of the mystery involved in terms of the head versus the heart. David Rubenstein, we don't know how far he's willing to push it, but we also don't know, or we sort of do know, that Mike Elias is not interested in, you know, handing out 7-year deals for almost anybody. And how that impacted the Corbin Burns negotiations, again, we don't have to rehash that too much because we know that there were other things involved in what Corbin Burns wanted. But still, you know, at this point, there are still moves to be made if they are going to get someone at the top of the rotation. And if they just run back the Corbin Burns trade and do it this time for Dylan Cease, that would not surprise me at all. You know, what are some other versions of that? I guess you could have said that they could have done that for Lizardo, or I don't know if there's other names out there. Crochet is really the obvious one that they could have. They were one of the few teams that probably could have matched Boston's offer, and Mike Elias was unwilling to do.
I think it is interesting they didn't do that. They didn't trade prospects for a frontline arm because they did it last year and it worked. Like, you got Corbin Burns.
But that's what I'm saying. They still could, but there's obviously running out of those options. Cease is the obvious parallel, and Cease is awesome, and I love Dylan Cease. He doesn't come with the same level of certainty that Corbin Burns did in the same way.
And this team, where it stands right now, is not more imposing than the one that was swept by the Royals in the wild card round.
Yeah.
With Burns and Santander versus Tyler O'Neill, Charlie Morton, Sagano, and Gary Sanchez. Like, this team is less scary. They could still win 92 games and make the playoffs. Yeah. Like, that could totally happen. But when your big offseason additions in the rotation are 41 and 35, like,
That's totally valid. And you're hoping that Felix Bautista is, you know, changing the complexion of your pitching staff when he's back.
Yeah, he's going to throw 100. He's going to throw 120 innings, so it's fine.
Right. That is probably not the best idea. So you kind of deal with that. But, you know, you could say this about a lot of teams, but you are a lot of your projection is hoping that Adley Rutschman is back to an all-star version of himself, that Jackson Holliday is a good baseball player, right? There are parts of this roster that you are both excited and kind of curious about. You have foundational pieces in place. You have one of the best players in baseball in Gunnar Henderson. You have other good, like, he's going to be a good player in Ryan Mountcastle and even Colton Cowser to some degree. But there's other
Kyle
parts.
Kyle Bradish,
like,
who finished top five in the Cy Young,
so
is going to be
Bradish
back at some point.
Sneaky that, but also you don't know when that's happening. And that's not now. Yeah. Maybe you could say, if you want to be super optimistic, he's starting game two in the postseason or game one. It doesn't feel like an awesome plan A when you consider where they're at in their competitive cycle. Now, before we move on from this, I just want to read an excerpt from an interview with Charlie Morton, okay? Because the discourse around, 41, Charlie Morton, what a joke, like, I think that's unfair. Not because it's true, I get it, he's 41 and he was an okay pitcher in 2024, I get that. But let's take a moment here, okay? I'm going to read you an excerpt from an interview with Charlie Morton. Year redacted. Question, Charlie Morton, is there a scenario where this is your last year? Yeah, a situation would dictate whether or not I keep playing. Am I healthy? That's probably the biggest question. Is my health? How am I pitching? How am I pitching at the end of the year? What do contract offers look like? What are those teams that are offering the contracts? Where are they located? All these things that are factor into it. And then we're going to make a decision. He, you know, talks about his family, right? Of course, this is really important to spend time with his family. And then he says this as well. Honestly, I'm trying to appreciate the moments because my career is winding down. It could be this year, next year. I'm not going to keep playing for a long time. I can promise you that. I'm not going to keep playing for 4, 5, 6, 7 more years.
This was Jake, 2017 after they won the World Series.
That was April 2018. That is when Charlie Morton said those words to Jake Kaplan, the Astros beat writer of The Athletic. Since then, he has thrown over 1,000 more innings. He has appeared in 2 more World Series, including in 2020 with the Rays. He finished 3rd in Cy Young that year that he was talking. He won the World Series with a broken leg in 2021. He became absolutely beloved in Atlanta. And now he will continue to pitch at age 41 because, as he first said, am I healthy? He has been one of the most durable pitchers in the league since he turned 34. He has basically only been hurt once, not counting his freak broken leg on the comebacker in the World Series, which didn't end up impact. He didn't end up missing any time besides being taken off the World Series roster. Charlie Morton is an amazing thing. And him, his career, because of his age and because of kind of how it's gone, it kind of straddles the line between Verlander and Scherzer and like Rich Hill, right? We have Rich Hill where he like, is like, oh my God, Rich Hill, what a thing. He's right. Pitched like for 50 million years.
We get a video of Rich Hill and it's like, okay, like hang it up.
We get that. Like, but Charlie Morton is way better than Rich Hill and has been for multiple years. Still very useful, but he's not an all-star anymore. He's not going to be a Hall of Famer. But this dude was also drafted before LeBron was drafted. And this dude is still pitching and is still going to be useful to the Baltimore Orioles. And that is amazing. So Charlie Morton, I know that he's become like he's indirectly being dunked on because like he represents Orioles not being willing to go get a real ace or whatever. But the fact that he's still pitching here is just astonishing. And I hope and I assume that because he can continue to make $50 million, that his family that maybe thought he was going to retire 5 or 6 years ago is cool with this and he gets to keep living. I know he lives in Bradenton, so that's easy. And I think his family's in Delaware, so that's easy.
How much money do you need to not see your dad?
Well, that's the thing. So all of this is to say, Charlie Morton, you are awesome. And I clap it up, man. Maybe sick. Maybe stop putting timelines on your retirement because we don't really believe those anymore.
That's so badass. Dude, he's average fastball. Last year was 94.1. Like league average is 94.7. Like he's throwing.
He's fine.
He's fine.
Oh, I just love that. I don't think I'm going to pitch. Six more years. Yeah, well, this is it. This is the seventh season since he said that. So congratulations, Charlie Morton. Anyway, one other major move that happened over the weekend, the Dodgers emerging as the surprise suitor for Korean second baseman, or is he more than just a second baseman, Hye-Sung Kim. Now, we talked about him very briefly earlier this offseason when he was posted. We did not have him on our top 50 free agent rankings, although we might have put him on there somewhere in the back half had he been posted officially at the time we did our rankings. This is a 26-year-old second baseman who has been one of the better players in the KBO for the last 5-6 years. He hasn't been the best player. He has not been, you know, far and away dominating the league offensively like we saw totally all around game like we saw with Hye-Sung Kim, who was his teammate with the Kiwoom Heroes. But what he is has generally been a very good athletic defensive second baseman who has put the ball in play and steals a bunch of bases. And because players who come from foreign leagues in general, but especially with the KBO, where the level of play is much lower than it is in Japan, there is a wide range of opinions about what this guy could be as a hitter because pitching in Korea is not very good right now. And so you're betting on the athlete and the person to kind of become a good major league hitter as much as taking his KBO numbers and being like, okay, this means he's going to do this in MLB. We saw it with Hye-Sung Kim. It took him a little bit of time and he has, you know, established himself as an above average major league hitter in a very unique way. But because we didn't totally know what teams thought of him as a hitter, there were a lot of different teams involved here. And the fact that the Dodgers ended up signing him to a 3-year, $12 million deal with options to make it 5 years, $22 million, it's kind of a reminder when we talk about prospects and we talk about players, it's like, what is this guy on a championship team, right? Because, yeah, he could go start every day and get 600 plate appearances for the Angels, you know, like he probably could do that, but that's a very different assignment and a different standard, or even for the Mariners for that matter, who are obviously desperate at this point to acquire an infielder and probably would have given him a lot more playing time. But the Dodgers, the championship team, the gold standard in Major League Baseball, they look at him and they said, you are useful. You are a good player. We believe in you, but you're probably not going to get 300, 400 plate appearances, at least not right away. We view you as a super utility guy. You can play second. You can play short. You can play some outfield, which he played a couple years ago in the KBO. And we're going to have you kind of ease into this, you know, operation that is the Los Angeles Dodgers good baseball club. And you will fit in that way, as opposed to coming in and being like, you're the second baseman and you're going to have to figure it out and you're going to have to figure out major league pitching right away. And I think that that tells me a lot about the Dodgers, where obviously he was wanting to go and play into that role, as opposed to somewhere where it's like you get to play immediately. But also it maybe says a lot about, you know, some of these other teams. We heard that the Mariners, the Padres were also interested, the Cubs. Those would be different roles, I'm sure. We don't know exactly what those offers were, but the fact that the Dodgers ended up with him when it didn't seem like they needed him, although I can see where they kind of fit. So I'm curious for you, as I've kind of laid out who he is as a player, where do you see him fitting? Because they've already said they're still committed to this Lux Betts middle infield. We're not really buying that, but I don't know. What do you think?
No. Like, so Mookie, it's sure. I don't want to talk about that right now. It stresses me out.
Okay. Well, but it's relevant just because if they are going to trade Lux, then maybe I'm totally wrong and Hyesung Kim is going to be their starting second baseman or their starting shortstop. Like, that is interesting too, because then maybe that's a big evaluation if they are committing to him that's playing every day. But maybe they believe that way. They don't really have any lefty bench bats, so Kim certainly serves that role. I don't know. Also, it's really hard for me to imagine Kike finds his way back at this point. I could be wrong, but he's running out of spots.
You've said that before.
I know I have, but he's running out of spots here.
My favorite Kim thing, this was a report from Jiho Yu on Twitter. He says, one report quotes a CAA official as saying Shohei Ohtani, a fellow CAA client, met with Kim in the U.S. and, quote, gave him a lot of advice. Hi, I'm Shohei Ohtani. Here's my advice. Sign with the Dodgers. Hit 50 home runs and steal 50 bases. If you do that, you're going to be just fine. Yeah. Thanks, Joe. But for real, though, okay, for real, though, I think if you're any player coming to America and you get to sit down and you get to meet with Shohei Ohtani, like, that holds weight, right? That has sway.
And again, like, we don't know where this offers. Did he take less to go with the Dodgers? Again, I think that this is a good for him to get 3 guaranteed years. As a Korean player, like that's a small group of players that have been able to do that. And to get that from a team like the Dodgers is, I think, impressive. And again, there will be, as it stands right now, very little pressure on him. You know, he can transition in with the best possible resources and the best winning environment and all those things in a way that if he went to some of these other places, he would have been one of the main attractions. And in this way, it's like, great, come be part of this thing and hopefully it works out. So I'm curious what that ends up looking like and if the Dodgers do have a more dramatic move in them where Gavin Lux is involved.
One last Dodgers thing. The Dodgers tweeted a picture of their baby-faced catcher, Will Smith, in a tuxedo with the caption, "Our champ is off to the Golden Globes."
I saw
that. And I was like, why is Will Smith going to the Golden Globes? And I tried to learn more about why Will Smith was at the Golden Globes. So, you know, I just searched Will Smith Golden Globes.
Did you find anything?
Couldn't find what I was looking for.
Wait, do we know why? Of all the Dodgers to go to the Golden Globes, I'm not sure he would have been one of my first pick, other than that his name is Will Smith.
Yeah. I have absolutely no idea.
Here's who didn't go. Diego Cartaya, because he was DFA'd. More on him whenever some team ends up claiming him. We're going to take a quick break. And when we return, Jake will turbo mode his thoughts on some of the biggest moves he missed. We'll be right back on Baseball Barbercast.
Hey, welcome back to Baseball Barbercast. I was away for a stretch, and I missed some stuff, man. I did.
Sure did. Yeah.
But I do have thoughts on, I have thoughts on the stuff.
I'm going to give you 10 minutes to talk about these 10 moves.
Give me 1 second. I have a notebook. I wrote some thoughts down. I just got to grab it.
Oh, look at this professional. Look at you. You say people. Who was I talking to about this? Oh, I think I was talking to co-host Ben Nicholson Smith. I gave him the rundown. I shared with him our Google Doc where we prepare our podcast. And he looked at it. He's like, man, you guys are way more prepared than I thought. I'm like, I know. Look at
I thought
us.
You were talking to him about how you don't own a notebook.
No. I'm just saying that we prepare in different ways. That's not exactly a secret. All right. So, I mean, go in. I put these on the sheet in order of sort of importance, but you can go in whatever order you want. Go ahead, Jake Mintz.
So I just wrote down some assorted notes over the course of the week.
You're going to empty the
notebook. I'm just going to tell you what I have on here. Okay.
Okay.
Corbin Burns. First thing, taxes matter. Mm-hmm. They do.
We clearly did learn that. Yeah.
Money is not always money. And that's why Corey Seager is on the Rangers and not the Dodgers. And why being paid $210 million to live in Arizona is better than getting paid $230 million to live in Canada. Good dad behavior. Write that down. And I think he's making up for what he did during the All-Star game. Do you remember this?
Mm-hmm.
When during the All-Star game,
this is his way of compensating. Yeah.
Like his twins were born like the day before the All-Star game. He flew in the morning of the game, pitched the first inning, and then flew home.
It's not like he hung around for no reason.
I mean,
it was an in and out situation.
He started the game, but you know, maybe he feels bad and he's going to make it up to the kids. Make Montgomery the closer. Wrote that down. Burns the closer, because Boyden's the Diamondbacks.
Imagine Burns would play up in relief.
Whew. Yeah, I mean, and their Montgomery stinks.
Probably not, but yeah, their bullpen is not awesome right now.
I wrote down should have played for the Twins, for his twins.
Oh yeah, I don't think they could afford that, and I don't think he wanted to live in Minnesota or Fort Myers for any amount of time.
But the Twins.
Twins, yes.
Think of
Joe Mauer had twins. It's not going to get better than that. It's not going to get better than that.
And then the last thing I wrote down on here was the Rays, and I'll explain that. Tampa is missing out on this advantage in a huge way. They're such an undesirable location that doesn't pay people any money. The number of players who live in and around Tampa in that area is enormous. Think about Charlie Morton, who just signed with the Orioles because they're... Bradenton is near Sarasota for the month and a half of spring training. Like, guys care about this a lot in a really meaningful way. And if the Rays ever got their crap together from like an not on field, they're good at development, they put good teams in the field. Like, if they ever got the other stuff together, I mean, they could be a really desirable location for a lot of free agents.
I think that's true. That said, Pete Alonso, Tampa zone, go home, trade Yandy, sign Pete, make it happen. All right, continue.
For Teoscar Hernandez, I have being a Dodger sure seems great.
I don't think we have to say anything else about that.
Seems like a good time.
Yeah.
So,
no notes.
No notes. Sean Manaea signing with the Mets. I wrote down, what a good guy. I like that guy.
So that's is that a Jake Mintz win? Sean Manaea still hanging out around in New York?
Yeah, man. We just get Ryan Stanek back and everything's looking up. Sean Manaea, I am all in on. You insinuating on the pod that he and Luis Severino, that Severino is better than Manaea, I think is disrespectful. I am all in on Manaea. I'm a big believer, and I've talked about the Mets pitching development and how real I think it is. I think they will do a very good job of keeping Manaea where Manaea was. I think he is someone who can start game two of a playoff series for you. I am fascinated that the Mets have chosen to build their rotation this way and would like to talk about it more later on, because like they need an ace and I don't think they have one, and it's odd, and maybe we talk about it another time. Walker Buehler, I wrote, the Red Sox are the who the hell knows all-stars, because this rotation is just a big old ball of risk. I mean,
yeah,
Lucas Giolito. It's who the hell knows. I mean,
it's who the hell knows.
Look, man, you can bet on black, you can bet on red. It's a 50-50 chance. Lucas Giolito, could be, who knows?
Especially if you're CJ Abrams.
Walker Buehler, especially if you're, but you bet on both. Walker Buehler, what is he? Who the hell knows? Right? Garrett Crochet, is he going to throw 120 innings? Brian Baio, I actually feel pretty certain he's not that great. He's fine. He's fine.
Oh, okay.
He's actually
the one you think you know what he is. Interesting. Okay.
If we were to throw ERA pluses at the entire Red Sox starting rotation for this upcoming season, I would feel the most confident about Bayo, about getting within like 10 of Bayo versus anybody else. And then the other Walker Buehler thing I think is interesting is he's going with number zero. Yeah. He's wearing number zero. Now, here's the thing about that. I think Marcus Stroman and Adam Ottavino kind of have that. It's an interesting choice to enter into the zero. Now, he can't wear 21 because this guy named Raj Clem was wearing that number during his Red Sox days. And so he can't wear that. But zero is a kind of a me guy number. And I think it's a good move for Walker Buehler because he, not that he's a me guy, but he is like selfish in a on mound way that's very effective. Like he doesn't take any crap. But zero. So it was zero.
We had, I don't know if you knew this, we had 13 players wear zero in 2024. I'm not going to make you
guess
them.
That's so goofy.
But Jack Flaherty also was wearing zero with the Dodgers. I don't know if that will continue at his next team, which will probably not be the Dodgers. But it is true that Stroman and I feel like Mason Wynn is the other one who's really owning zero right
now. It fits him. It fits him, though.
He's great.
Gleyber Torres.
Oh, yeah.
Tigers needed someone who knew how to hit.
Dude, it really is that simple. Our conversation about Gleyber could have been really that much. I said this when I watched him in the postseason. I was just like, God, he just, please, can we get someone that is like, oh, it's a good hitter? Because for all you can say about Gleyber, you would say, oh, that guy's a good hitter, right?
He's a good hitter. Yankees fans, look, I'm glad that you're done with this. Like, this was never going to, we're good. We're done. It's great, right? Like, Gleyber hitting leadoff for you for all that time turned out to be frustrating, but he was your third best hitter, right? Like, he's good. He's good at hitting. He's infuriating, and like, I wouldn't give him 2 years, but the Tigers being so versatile with their defensive orientation allows them to kind of pick at what they wanted and get someone on a bargain. I kind of like that deal. That's all I have in my notebook. I can kind of rocket fire the rest of these. Chalk Peterson, Rangers. 2 years for a lefty DH is hilarious, especially because for Jock, the money doesn't matter because his wife is like the heiress of the Apple fortune.
That's like true. And yet, this is a hell of a deal, right? 237 was like beyond what we thought.
That's what I love about it. It's like he's still out there making money, even though it doesn't matter. It's like Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Next up, Rays signing Eloy Jimenez.
Yes.
Sure. I had hope for him when the Orioles traded for him, and then I watched him. The problem with Eloy Jimenez right now is that, you know, when people say, oh, it makes a different sound coming off of his bat when they talk about a player, and it's usually a compliment, it's the opposite with Eloy Jimenez. The sound is like a piece of bread soaked in water hitting a kitchen counter. That's what it sounds like when Eloy Jimenez makes contact. It's just not great. Andrew McCutchen signing with the Pirates. They should sign a contract in perpetuity. It should just be like, with inflation, you get this amount of money every year, forever, until your body crumbles. Yeah. That's exactly what's happening. And I don't know if it's a good thing for the Pirates, because maybe it's time to move on and like, be a real team.
I'm
happy the fans get to go and watch him play.
The one thing about Kutch that I love is that he's now like, obviously the athleticism and the explosion is essentially gone because he's, you know, been playing for a long time, but he 100th percentile chase rate, like his at bats are still art. Like, he is so locked in, he'll still draw walks, but what happens when he does swing is not as exciting as it used to be.
Joe Ross to the Phillies. This is the Spencer Turnbull Memorial Award for sixth starter behavior.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Spencer Turnbull, remember how good he was before they forced Taiwan Walker back in the rotation? And Spencer Turnbull's still a free agent. And I wonder if some team is going to enjoy him, maybe, potentially.
Yep. We'll see. That's someone who the Orioles would have signed last year. National signed Trevor Williams. He got 2 years. He likes living in D.C., happy for Trevor. Great. White Sox signed Josh Rojas. I did not know that until I read it on this piece of paper. And I guess that's it. Here, my one other question who's going to get into the Hall of Fame? Because that is something I kind of missed out. And we have all the people tracking all the public votes. And I literally have no idea. Like, I don't know who's going to get in. I assume Ichiro is in. I know it's Billy Wagner's last year. And, you know, I love Billy Wagner. And I could talk about him forever. But is that it? Is this Billy Wagner and Ichiro?
There's a guy, really big guy, threw a lot of innings, CeCe Sabathia. He's going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, he's going to get in. First year.
Yeah. Yeah. We're not too concerned about that. Okay. However, there is some very interesting Hall of Fame stuff happening that we should definitely do a longer podcast on in the coming weeks. Because I believe the announcement is like the 25th, I think.
Am I going to get in?
I don't know exactly. I don't think you have gotten any votes yet. But we will definitely do a Baseball Hall of Fame pod probably maybe next week. I know we got Sasaki coming up. January 21st will be the announcement. So I will be on vacation at that point, but maybe after I come back, we can talk about it.
I have a question.
All right.
These Hall of Famers.
One final question, then let's say goodbye. Yeah.
These Hall of Famers, their final year was 2019, right?
Yes.
Carlos Gomez didn't get on the ballot.
Carlos Gomez did not get on the ballot. That is an interesting point.
That's a shame.
Yeah. So he did play the requisite 10 years.
He put 24 wins.
I guess he, so it's like Carlos Gonzalez got on the ballot.
They had one cargo.
They had one cargo who actually it's very similar. Like, sorry. Did they literally have identical career war totals? They did. That is so weird. Okay. So I guess they only had room for one cargo. On that strange note, we will do more Hall of Fame, discussion at some point in the future. I have a feeling we'll get some news in time for Thursday's pod. But thank you, Jake, for joining me on this episode of Baseball Barbercast. Thank you, producer Andrew Hartz, for making this show possible. You can email us baseballbarbercast@gmail.com. And we'll be back on Thursday. Jake, close us out.
If you're in Thailand on the island of Koh Samui and you want a long toss during the next couple of days, send me a DM because I gotta throw up.
All right. Thank you, Jake. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Goodbye.